Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The River. This is Tom Fuller coming to you from beautiful Portland, Oregon, with my friends and your hosts, authors Maxine Marcellini and Jeannie St. John Taylor. Every Monday, Maxine and Jeannie get together to share what's on their hearts with listeners around the world. They chat with other authors and friends on a wide variety of topics. Some bring a laugh, some cause us to wipe away a tear, but all of them send rivers of blessing into our lives. These shows can be life-changing if our hearts are open and allow the river of God's love to pour into our deepest needs. So, listeners, are you ready? Now's the perfect time for me to stop talking and let the ladies take us on today's exciting journey down the river.
Welcome to the river, listeners. And in Portland, Oregon, it's not frozen. I don't know how it is where you are. This is Jeannie St. John Taylor stammering to start the show. And I'm here with my friend Maxine Marcellini. Maxine, welcome.
Well, thanks, friend. Yeah, it's a beautiful morning. I actually had a walk without getting rained on today, and that felt pretty good.
It was sunny here. We live in the same place, listeners.
Yeah.
It was almost 60, wasn't it?
Well, not quite that warm, but close to 50. And then they're predicting rain will come back this afternoon, though, maybe around 2 o'clock. So I'm enjoying it while I can, and it's, you know, the prelude into Thanksgiving day, which happens later this week. And so are you getting all your preparations ready?
Have not started. I spent last week in the Dalles taking care of grandkids, and then I spent the next 3 days sick in bed with the flu that still lingers a little. So this afternoon, my preparations start. I've got a house to clean. And, so, no. Are you ready?
I'm going out this afternoon like you. I've got the turkey to pick up and all the things to go with it. So I'm going to get mine underway this afternoon as well. But I'm excited about our guest. This Jeffrey Woods is going to be talking about a subject that's close to my heart since I speak into broken families' lives too. So why don't you go ahead and get us started with Jeffrey?
Yeah, and also this is great because last week we talked about dads, and this week it's dads again in a totally different way. We're going to talk about a book by Jeff Woods called A Case for Wisdom, A Son's Story About Reconciling with His Father. Jeffrey Woods holds a bachelor's degree in exercise physiology and a master's degree in public health. He currently teaches mathematics. Jeff is a certified life coach and founder of the Institute of Wisdom and Courage. And if you want to see more about him, you go to www.wisdomandcourage.com. He lives in Sierra Madre, California. Jeff, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Or should I just say Jeffrey? Do you ever use Jeff or is it Jeffrey?
Either one's fine.
Okay.
Doesn't matter.
Okay. Jeffrey, can you give us an overview of your story and why you came to resent your dad so deeply?
Sure. The overview, it really is, it's a book about how the wisdom from my Christian faith guided me towards from hating my father to loving him in a new and profound way. And it really started, the deterioration of our relationship really started when I was young in elementary school, and he came down with stomach cancer. He actually had esophageal and stomach cancer. And that was a huge, huge burden on the family. And back at that time, this is probably the early 70s, you know, the word cancer, to me, especially as a young child, meant that he was going to die. So I really started to distance myself from him once I found out he had cancer.
Okay, so how old were you at that time, Jeffrey?
I was about 10.
Okay, so... Yeah. And then you mentioned that, so the cancer caused the first distancing.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an emotional separation at that point, and then he actually left home as well?
Yes. And when he came back from his surgery, he really was a different person. I mean, even physically, he couldn't do as much with the family. He was very withdrawn. He would, you know, have these angry outbursts every once in a while. So I always kind of walked on eggshells with him. I just didn't know how he would react. And over time, it really became, it was like my mother and us kids, and then it was my dad. So we had those kind of two divisions within the family. And right before I was to leave for college, about a month before, he came home one evening. He called us all into the living room, and he sat down and he said, "I have something very important to tell you. This is going to change the dynamics of our family forever." And I immediately thought, his cancer is back, and he's going to die. So my worst fear all these years is finally coming to fruition. But the next words out of his mouth were, "I'm in love with another woman, and I'm leaving." And I was in shock. I wasn't expecting to hear those words. I was expecting to hear, you know, my cancer's returned, and I'm going to die. So I was in complete shock, and he left that evening. He took some of his clothes, and he just left, and left us all in complete and utter shock. I had no idea that he had been involved with this other woman for a couple of years.
Jeff, didn't you say that his weight was down to like 100 and really low?
It was very low
point?
After his surgery, and then close to the end of his life, he had another cancer surgery, and he got down to 105 pounds.
How tall was he?
He was about 5'7".
That's pretty low.
Yeah.
Cancer does that, though. It's
yeah,
really
it does. You said that when he left the first time, or that when he left for the other woman, he said to you, "Don't I have a right to be happy?" What did you think about that, and what's your answer to that? What was it then, and what is it now?
That's a great question, because when that originally happened, when he said that, you know, I was so young. I was just about to leave for college and had this bombshell laid on me. And he said it within the context of his physical ailments, of his struggles with his health, with his cancer surgery. And he did struggle a lot with his health. You know, there were many complications after his cancer surgery, you know. And so when he said that, and then within the context of mentioning his cancer, I succumbed to it. I thought, well, he did go through a lot physically. It doesn't actually make sense to me, but I'll just be quiet, and because he did struggle a lot. But now, as an adult looking back on it, I think, to be honest, I think he used that as an excuse, because he was a father, he was a husband, and yes, does he have a right to be happy, but there were other people also that were dependent upon him for happiness as well. So I think he kind of used it to manipulate me to be quiet so I wouldn't ask these tough questions.
You know, the interesting thing is I heard the story of one of Michael Landon of Little House on the Prairie, one of his children, and he said that when his dad left home, he came home one day and his dad was sitting at the bottom of the stairway facing the front door, I think, and his dad talked to him, told him he was leaving, and the child was upset, and Michael Landon said the same exact thing. Well, don't I have the right to be happy? And I guess my response to that would be, well, the Bible says that you're going to be happy, if not that you won't have troubles, but you'll have basic contentment and joy if you follow the Lord. It does not say that you have the right to be happy any other way. It does not say that you have the right just at a whim to dump your pain onto the shoulders of, what was it, five other people in your family that took that? So he took his pain and multiplied it for you guys, put it on your shoulders.
Absolutely.
And there are reasons that people have to do that, and they're outlined in the Bible. But I would say that none of us have that right, just on a whim.
Right.
You agree with that, Maxine?
Well, I believe in its truest state that we should always be looking out to what our actions are going to do to others before we make those kind of decisions. But in the world that we live in, where sin does exist and where humanity is flawed, I know this is going to happen. It's something that I've experienced. It's something that I speak into the lives of other people who've gone through this. So the bottom line to it is the person that walks away is also a hurting individual through whatever has happened in that life, and then he ends up hurting others. So it becomes a generational kind of a cycle at sometimes that needs to be stopped. But until there's enough Bible knowledge, there's enough relationship with the Lord, I don't think that the fact that the Bible says this or the Bible says that is going to impact those people. They are going to learn the hard way what their actions create. And sadly, it does hurt other people who need to recover, as Jeff has needed to recover with his,
yeah,
his relationship with his father. So how did you get on a path to restoration? You went off to college. It sounds like your relationship with your dad had been pretty bad for at least 10 years before you went off to school. So how did you start the process?
Yeah, it took a long time because I have my own stubbornness as well. But really the turning point is that I heard this, what I call a great interview, a kind of a miracle that I was listening to it at the time, of someone on the radio that talked about forgiveness in a way that I had never heard before. See, I grew up in the church, and I always heard you're supposed to forgive and like that, but it never made sense to me because I thought, well, why should I forgive someone if they haven't asked for it and if they have wronged me? So I heard this person on this radio show talk about how he hated his mother and his father, and that got my interest because I hated my father. Mm-hmm. And instead of saying that he went to his mother and said, I forgive you, he said, Mother, please forgive me for hating you for the way you mistreated me. That instantly got my attention because I had never heard it spoken of in that terms before. But also it made sense to me because I thought what he is doing is he is taking full responsibility for what he allowed inside of himself. Mm-hmm. And from then on, God kind of worked through me to do the same thing with my father. Mm. So over a couple of conversations, what I did is I asked my dad to forgive me for hating him for his affair. And that, once I did that, that was the real turning point in our relationship. Mm. And I took full responsibility for what I allowed inside of me. Because before that, I always thought, well, he did wrong, he did this, he had the affair, I didn't. Which is true, but there were things that I didn't do correctly either. Maybe they weren't as damaging as what he did, they still weren't correct. So I took full responsibility for that.
I really like that.
This is the same thing that, well, my husband, he's passed away, but he did this very same thing after hearing a message toward his mother. And his mother had abandoned him as a child, and it's an opposite parent. But the thing was he'd carried bitterness, he'd carried hatred toward her for walking out of his life. And when he heard that message, he had to confront his own sin of unforgiveness. And I think many, many of us don't understand that when we don't forgive, it's sin in our lives, and it's not God's plan for us to hold on to that. So to do that, to take that courage, as you've just explained it, and as Charlie had done, and take that and follow up on it, frees you incredibly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really frees you to allow God to work in you. Because at that point, I thought I was done with this forgiveness thing. I thought it was done and over with. And, you know, it was great, but then that was it. But God had other plans. Because as time moved on, I saw that my dad was stuck in his guilt. And the purpose of guilt is to move us forward. But he was stuck in his guilt. So I knew there was a question that God gave to me that he wanted to ask my father, and I knew I had to do it. I just had to obey it, even though I was afraid. So I called my dad up and said, can we meet to talk? And he said, yes. And we were meeting at a restaurant. I remember driving over there, and You know, I was nervous. I knew that this question was a hard question for him to answer. But kind of the vision that God gave me was, come back to the question. If he veers off, if he, you know, starts talking about other things, always come back to the question. So I remember I met my dad, and he says, okay, what do you need from me? And I said, Dad, I don't need anything from you. This is all about you now. I have this very difficult question that I want to ask you. And he said, okay, what is it? And so I said, why did you hate us? And as you can think, you know, a father hearing that from a son, of course, he was taken off guard, and he started talking and rambling and, you know, maybe that's not the right word, et cetera. And so after a while, I let him ramble, but just like the vision God gave me, I came back to the question. I said, Dad, why did you hate us? If you didn't hate us, then certain things wouldn't have happened, like you leaving us for this woman. She became involved in our lives, and we didn't want her to, things like that. And to his credit, he really listened, and he was quiet. He was struggling to answer the question. His face turned red. His body was moving. And then he finally replied, and he said, I always thought that you were your mother's kids and not mine. And when I heard his truth, it's like, well, yeah, that's how it was, especially after he came home from the hospital. And then after that, he just started telling the truth. The truth was just pouring out that he had held in for many decades. You know, like one thing he said, I knew my affair was wrong. I knew it was the biggest mistake of my life, and I knew it hurt you kids tremendously. And I just kept listening to him, and at the end of the conversation, I said, Dad, here is your truth. The truth is before you. Now do with it with what you want.
I like that, too. I like all these things I hear you saying, Jeffrey. We hear some people say who divorced say they have a good and loving relationship with their ex. You see that as an erroneous belief. Is that correct? And why is that?
Yeah, let me say, it's hard for me to believe because I didn't experience that. My parents did not have a great relationship. They didn't say that they were best friends, like I hear some people say now. So I have to believe that it can work out and they can be amicable and have a respect for each other. I just never saw that. So when I hear it, I question about it. You know, about whether that's really possible. But objectively, I think it can happen. I don't think they should be best friends, but I think they can be amicable.
Maxine, do you have any light to shed on that?
Well, I think he's bringing up some good words here. I don't believe it's going to be a loving relationship, but I also believe it can be a respectful and cohesive for the benefit of the children. I don't think all people turn into enemies. In fact, I advocate that you do not turn into an enemy with your ex because your children really will continue to see you both as their parents. So the more you can do to keep harmony in that level, even though you are no longer a couple, the better your children will survive the breakup. So the word loving is perhaps stretching it a little much, but love also means showing compassion and empathy and respect for their other parent and not going head-to-head with that person to battle things out all the time and try to prove you're right and they're wrong, because that only makes everybody suffer. So, but Jeff was right on a lot of that. So what I'm a little puzzled by is why did you ask your father why he hated you? Because hate is a pretty powerful word, and I doubt if your father hated you. He hurt you, but I doubt if he hated you.
Because he actually admitted that he did. I mean, he actually finally admitted that. He didn't change the wording that I used. I mean, he tried at the beginning, but he actually admitted to that. It was because of his actions. His actions were horrific. From allowing her to call our house.
He felt hateful toward you, right?
Excuse me?
the actions he chose felt hateful toward you. Not mm-hmm. that in his heart he stopped loving you, though.
Well, if his actions, that's where I was always very confused as a child, because he'd have all these terrible actions, and yet he would say, I love you. And that's why I was always confused, because if this is what love is, then I don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, his the woman he was having an affair with for years and years and years actually abused you kids and your mother, at least via
she
the
did.
Phone. Right, and he knew and he allowed it, right?
Mm-hmm. He didn't protect us, absolutely.
No. And so that you translated that into hatred, and maybe he said that that was hatred then later, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that was a really unfortunate thing that I think doesn't happen to too many people. And forgiving him had to be something that was really difficult. And you say that there's a process to forgiveness, and it's something that you tried working through. Could you talk about true forgiveness and how one lets go of bitterness?
Mm-hmm. I think it has to start with the truth. That is what it starts with. So, for example, for me, saying, because I did commit to hate him, and if that did not do me any good at all, that I asked forgiveness for that, that was my truth. I knew that it was wrong. It's not something that God intended for me or wanted for my life. And then from there, I could see him in a different light, because I could see I was honest about allowing hate in my heart. I can see how people could do that. So at that time, I had more compassion for him. And what I wanted at that time for him is I wanted goodness to come out of him. And I knew he was stuck in his guilt, and the only way that goodness could come out of him is if he told the truth. Mm-hmm. So then the next step is, for me, was confrontation. I had to confront him on his own hatred and his hateful acts. And what he did, and what I admire him for, is he admitted it to me, and he actually wrote my mom a letter, and he said, I apologize to you for mistreating you and our children. So he took the next step also. And he used the correct word of mistreating.
Yeah.
And then he could be free of that and try to become a father that he really wanted to be.
So how did your relationship shift then?
Well, then I could trust him. So what had happened after that is, instead of denying a relationship that I knew he wanted with me, I wanted one with him. So I would call him up, say, Dad, let's get together. And he loved to talk about religion, politics, all this stuff. So I would just ask him questions about things he was interested in. And at that time, I was very interested in what he had to say. And then as he got older, you know, it was then time to start caring for him. And at that point in time, I really wanted to care for him where I didn't before. So it really shifted, and we had a good 6 to 7 years together before he passed.
Did you physically care for him, or just oversee his care?
In some way. He was actually, before he passed, he had another cancer surgery, mm-hmm. but he was eventually able to go home and live on his own. But what had happened was that my sister and I found him dead in his condo.
Mm-hmm.
So the last kind of act that I did for him, because my sister stayed back and I ran towards him, and I saw that he was naked, so the last kind of act that I did was I covered his body so his nakedness wouldn't show. And we were there specifically then to take care of his body and make sure that it was taken care of.
Mm. Does that have anything to do with you and your sister together, why you say forgiveness isn't singular, it's plural, or do you mean something else by that?
Well, it wasn't just about me. It was also about him.
Oh, okay.
And that's what I meant by that. That God gave me the vision to ask him that specific question and confront him on it. And then that's part of, broader of reconciling. I think forgiveness based upon the truth is a first step, and then you have to reconcile and confront the truth and then change your relationship.
Yeah.
What you're bringing up is, you know, what I see over and over in families is that people have these bitter roots that have taken hold due to various reasons of breakdowns in family relationships. But at the end of the day, when the health concerns are real, the family wants to be there. The family, it's still a connection. You never cut the cords of a father to a child or a mother to a child. They're there, and they're felt very strongly whether the relationship is good or it's bad. And what you're telling me is your final acts that you did for him are incredibly symbolic of the love that was present. The thing that people need to realize is that love and hate run very close together. And most often I see hate is birthed because love is present. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Explain that a little further for listeners, Maxine.
Okay. Well, we cannot be hurt to the level of hate unless we care deeply about something.
Okay.
Because hate is a very powerful emotion. But love, hate is part of the love package. When we feel wronged, the hatred can rise up. But at the end of the day, it's almost like sandwich between love and love is this word called hate, which can choose to pop up and make a bitter issue present in our lives. Or we can keep that under check through the operation of forgiveness that Jeff is so greatly explaining today. What we need to realize that hate is a personal choice. It's something we're choosing to do, and when we choose love over hate, forgiveness can enter in.
Jeff, we are getting really close to the end of time. How's that? When the radio will end. Is there one last thought you'd like to leave with our listeners that we've not drawn out of you? This has been excellent. You've given them some real gems of wisdom, and we thank you for that. So is there one more thing you'd like to say?
The only thing that I would like to say is if anyone is in a similar situation or same situation is, and if you feel stuck, pray that God will give you a vision for healing. Just start there. Pray for a vision from God and see what
happens.
Excellent. Because when you step out in faith, you never know what's going to happen.
Listeners, the book is A Case for Wisdom, A Son's Story About Reconciling with His Father by Jeffrey Woods. We will see you next Monday. We can't wait. We're going to start the Advent on Monday with Jane Rubietta.
This is Tom Fuller saying thank you for joining us on The River today. I pray blessings have come your way. Please check out our hosts' websites to learn a little more about them. Maxine Marcellini is the author of Rebuilding Families $1 at a Time, Blended Families, and Raising Children in Blended Families. She's a life coach whose website, rebuildingfamilies.net, is full of family helps and resources. Jeannie St. John Taylor is the author and illustrator of more than 25 books for adults as well as children. You'll find her books plus a link to read her newest biblical fiction, City of a Thousand Gods, on her website at jeanniestjohntaylor.com. All our programs are archived for later listening enjoyment. Consider posting a comment after today's show. And please let your friends know about what's happening at The River. Most of all, remember, you are never alone in this river called life. Jesus is with you and only a prayer away.